You are welcome. Also, invitation. And the state law advisor. That we are dealing with issues that are very, very crucial for improving the lives of the citizens of this country. Therefore, we have to take our work very, very seriously. And we apologize on that because we had to have a meeting as the portfolio committee said, because we have to consolidate the reports that we are having before us. Today, our agenda is we are expected to deal with the sectional titles bill. In terms of the program, we are supposed to run it through clause by clause. But I think, because as I mentioned that, if you remember in our last meeting, we have agreed that the committee requires more time to engage extensively. Because first of all, the Ombuds Service bill is a very, very crucial bill, and we all understand that both bills in South Africa, this market has not been taken care of. Now, after the dawn of democracy, we are seeing the majority of the people coming up to this market. So we need to ensure that we engage extensively with this bill. And the portfolio committee requested the parliament to extend the period as we were supposed to finalize the bill this week, but we agreed that we won't be able. So we are going to carry on with the bill and finalize them in the next term because of the parliamentary program, because parliament tomorrow is rising. So there won't be any committee activities. So we are coming back on the 11th. And from then, we will shoot so that we finalize. And we still maintain that. As the portfolio committee, we are committed. We are committed to finalize this bill. We are going to work very hard. We are prepared to work even extra hours when we come back to finalize this bill. So we don't want to leave people to say, no, the parliament is not serious about it. We are serious. But I think before we begin the process, as I was saying, we had a meeting before. The members are raising crucial issues to say, for instance, the Ombuds Service will require substantial changes, but we also require more information from the department. So I would like to give the members to engage with the department to get that information, because there is an issue around the content. There is no dispute. I mean, yeah, there is no dispute that we need this bill. We need this bill. The desirability and the content, there is no dispute. But we still need the rationale of not in fact, the rationale of these bills. And I will allow the members to engage, and thereafter we'll agree on the way forward. Because it is important that we get all the information that we require, so that we take decisive and informed decisions. I don't think that thing is going to even catalog. God bless. Members, over to you. I'm seeing Madam Bowman, Honorable Singh, Honorable Botha, Honorable Gula, and then Honorable Tole in that session. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. On this portfolio committee, we are quite passionate about the work that we do. I need to endorse what our committee chair has said. However, we do have concerns with these two pieces of legislation. And I want to get back. The chairperson has already indicated that there's a growing market in this area, and I picked up somewhere that we're looking at something like 51% of the people of this country in this kind of accommodation. And amongst those, a lot of people coming into it for the first time. So there's and I think our concern is really around the fact that we don't want to create something that is going to be beyond the reach of the people that we need it for, and expenses, and all the ratepayers are going to pay, or, you know, we don't want this great big bureaucracy created around the ombud person. And the other concern is why we've got, and we did touch on this last week, but I think we want more clarity from the department on why we can't have both of these bills merged into a piece of legislation. Now, having said that, we are also aware that we're dealing here with different schemes. And we need to just understand properly the rationale between the two bills, why it's got to be two bills. And having said that, why the ombuds bill, it doesn't seem, we're not clear about what it's trying to say to us. And perhaps your rationale behind that. We don't have a sort of a costing thing. We don't know who you're aiming at, how it's going to function, what the regions mean, all these sort of things. We've got questions about that. So broadly speaking, we're saying we need to understand your rationale in the way you've presented the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Member Bowman said some of what I wanted to say. I'm just going to add on to that because we obviously of the same mind. I think we understand perhaps a fundamental reason for having two separate bills. And the one is that the management deals with management of sectional title only. And the ombudsman deals with a wider market, which includes shareholders and homeownership, etc. However, the implication of the two bills is that each one has their own management structure in terms of officials, in terms of chief executive officers, etc. I also find, having gone through the two, that in the one case there's an advisory council established, in the other case there's a board council established. And it seems to me that we're duplicating services here. And I think one of the reasons, certainly for myself, for wanting to merge the two is so that we then end up with one structure, which would effectively half the cost of these, because each one goes with their own operating costs and their own ivory towers, etc. And it's a concern of this committee, seeing particularly because they look at, or the bill purports to add onto the levies of the consumer. In order to finance these boards. So there is a particular concern, which I will address later as we go along. So, Chairperson, I share the concern that I want the department actually to convince me, having acknowledged that there is a particular difference, why the second bill cannot just be another chapter in the first bill and where we end up with one board rather than two different boards as well. So without looking at any of the other proposed amendments, I think that, Chairperson, is the primary one that will dictate the way forward for us. Thank you.
Give the opportunity to the department to respond. Oh, sorry. Honorable Fuller, I'm sorry.
Chair, I think the subject has been adequately covered, but I'm very much concerned, in addition to what has been covered, the legal implications. The legal implications of the two pieces of legislation. Does it speak to one another? One. Two, should we decide that we can merge the two pieces of legislation? Will there be any negative factors that hamper one against the other? Lastly, Chairperson, the issues of the different pieces of legislation dealing with certain sectors of the community. Are there any business studies, any examples that you might, the department might quote, to influence the committee that this is the correct way that we are going, and there is a case study that we have done, and it has proved it to be correct? Thank you, Chair.
Yeah, I think on the legal issue, we will request the state law advisor at the end of our discussion. Let's leave that to him. So the department.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and thank you to the Honorable Members. I'll of course respond to some of the questions and also allow my colleagues as well, to add on some. I think the first question that relates, to the merger of these particular two bills. I think, Honourable Members, we need to have a clear understanding, of the reasons behind these two bills. I think firstly that it is quite imperative for us to know that the sectional title schemes management, it deals predominantly with regards to the management and governing provisions of the sectional title schemes. However, it is quite critical as well to note that if you peruse the two bills, if you read this particular bill, the sectional title schemes, you must, of course, read it in conjunction with the community schemes. Because this particular two bills, they talk to each other. And I'll say the reasons why. If you read the community schemes, Honorable Chair, it provides for the definition of what we mean by community scheme. The community scheme, it does not only relate to providing of a dispute resolution within the management of the development of schemes, but it talks about the shared block, it talks about the retirement villages, it talks about the homeowners association. We are providing a one-stop shop in respect of the dispute resolution in the number of schemes. However, it is critically important for us to note that we are not only coming up with an ombuds that's going to respond to one sector of the schemes. The retirement villages, there are problems within the retirement villages. At this point in time, all people are concerned with regard to the issues not being resolved. We are also trying to ensure with the ombuds to ensure that we come up with a particular kind of dispute resolution that's going to respond to the particular, issues of the retirement villages. It is not only the fact that we are already coming with this piece of legislation, which is the ombuds, to deal with only the sectional title development schemes problems that arose out of that. As indicated to say that it deals with number. We talk about the share block, we talk about, the homeowners association, we talk about, the retirement villages. So it is quite important to ensure to say that we need to separate the two bills. But however, if you have a look at the sectional title schemes management, it talks about the management and the country provision of the sectional titles. It provides, the issues. That's why in this particular piece of legislation, if you have a look at class 3 and 4, it talks about the functions of the body corporate. It talks about the issues that relate to the part of the body corporate. So I think it is quite important for us to that from the technical point of view, it's going to be very difficult for us to ensure that we've got only one ombuds, we've got one piece of legislation that deals with the dispute resolution within the one skills only. So it is quite important for us to ensure that we widen this particular scope so that we deal with those other kind of issues. And secondly,
just on a point of order, I think when we spoke, we made it very clear that we were aware of the distinction in terms of the two. And we are by no means saying that if we, in fact, include the ombudsman into the sectional titles bill, that it will only apply to the sectional title. If we go that route, then we are going to be very clear that the ombuds will a portion of it will apply to all those other schemes. So just to confirm once again, without the department having to give that as a reason, we are very aware of that. So we'd like the other reasons to convince us why we should not consider one book. Thank you.
I think the other point that we also need to give more to try and to emphasize is that, and I was saying also you put the question with regard to the issue of the advisory council and also the issue that relates to the board. But however, in terms of the sectional title schemes management, we are talking about the advisory board. We are not talking about the advisory board, but we are talking about the advisory council. That's going to advise the minister with specific rules, what is it that intend they cannot to do. But however, if you have a look at the sectional titles, you know, act as amended, it talks about the board. The board which is going to deal with the issues that relate to the registration aspect, that's going to deal with the survey issues. But in this particular deal, we are not specifically dealing with the board. We are not establishing the board, we are establishing the council. The board agreement is established in terms of the sectional titles, you know, in terms of the sectional titles act, as amended, you know, that is currently administered by the Department of Rural Development. That's where the board agreement is established. But this one, it only talks about the establishment of the council.
I think Mr. Staley is clear. He's saying, in the sectional titles, we do have the advisory council. But on the
ombuds,
we still have a board.
Yes.
What the committee is saying, is advising, is that why can't we merge this? Because all those issues that are there in the ombuds service, they can be accommodated in one legislation. But what we are saying, because whatever you have proposed, not that thing you have proposed is going to be the final. The committee is still going to work on it. But why can't we have the reasons, the rationale, why can't we align this with one? Because we are looking at the implications, cost implications, and you have not yet given this committee the business case that we have presented to the National Treasury. And that is our role as this committee. Before we pass any bill, we are pretty sure about the implications, cost implications, that will follow after. You know the case of the HDA. I don't want to talk about it here, but you know. So we are trying to run away from those issues. What a business case that we have presented to the National Treasury.
I therefore confirm to say that Honorable Chair that we will make available the copy of the business case, to the committee, for the committee to peruse and have a look at.
I think in your responses, I think it is important for you to also explain the differences between the share block companies and homeowners association and housing schemes for the time, all those things you mentioned in your responses. And the sectional title, what are the differences?
Madam Chair, I'm Graham Paddock of the consultants. I wonder if I could just take you through two responses. The sectional title schemes management bill seeks to regulate the management and control in the private sector of individual sectional title schemes. So whilst it does have an advisory board, the purpose of that advisory board is merely to advise the minister, to give the minister input from people who really work and live in those as real-life input, but the infrastructure created in terms of the sectional title schemes management bill is one that already exists, has existed since 1973 in the private sector. It is, however, as was suggested, an increasingly popular, particularly in the urban areas. It is seen as the way forward for housing in South Africa. That's a very important part. But I wonder if I could just throw a little bit of light on this on this business of community schemes. At the moment, just to give you a lightning tour of that, you've got the sectional title schemes, which are covered by the current Sectional Titles Act, and where the survey and registration will continue to be covered by that act, whereas management will be covered under this act. The purpose of that separation was the decision of Cabinet in 2004 that all housing-related legislation should come under this department, so that it can use that department for the purposes of housing South Africa. So that is the reason there is a splitting at all in the background. But that is also generally considered to be a sensible thing. That sectional title, if you go to homeowners associations, some homeowners associations are created in terms of the common law. Others are regulated. Their governance structure is regulated under the Companies Act. Those are the two types commonly used in South Africa. Retirement developments, they can be simply by life rights, by way of agreement. They might be trusts, they might be companies, they might be any form of legal entity or even simply an agreement that you can think of. In other words, there's not a box that you can put retirement developments into. However, there is national legislation in the form of the Housing Developments for Retired Persons Act that seeks, much as the Community Schemes Ombuds Service does, to say, however you create your retirement village, here are some requirements as to how you will run it. If it happens to be a company, if it happens to be a sectional title scheme, then, of course, your own applicable legislation will apply. If it's not, however, here's a backup set of consumer protection and owner protection provisions that will apply. When you come to share blocks, they are, of course, companies under the Companies Act. When you talk about more general shared usage, our common law allows for that. So we have this entire very varied canvas on which housing is delivered in multiple legal forms. And the idea of the Sectional Title Schemes Management Bill is simply to create an easily accessible set of regulations that will deal for, this doesn't seek to give any guidance to people in retirement villages, into any of these things. What it does, because we think sectional title is so important for South Africa's urbanized future, is to, in one piece of legislation, give something where owners and managing agents can access it. It's only 20 sections or so. It is possible to learn that. It's possible to understand it and take that knowledge from scheme to scheme. And that's what we believe South Africa needs, to be able to fully utilize this and to make both simple and complex forms of sectional title, because that's what we need. In the future, we will need the simplest forms of sectional title schemes and the most complex. Century City, for example, is a sectional title scheme. In it, all its shopping bits and that sort of thing. So Section Title has the potential to be incredibly useful in the provision of South African housing, but it is Cabinet's decision and a most sensible decision that the way in which they manage should be in a particular act. One asks, and you already know the answer to this partially, why you can't merge the two. Well, of course, you can do anything you like, but the fact of the matter is the Sectional Title Schemes Management Act is designed to be there as an easily accessible, readily understandable thing for sectional title, whereas the Community Schemes Ombuds Service Bill is designed to give people in all forms of shared housing access to justice. And to merge the two, of course you can do it if you want to, but it is not going to serve the purpose of making it easy for the public to understand how these things operate. To embed how you operate a sectional title scheme in a generic form of housing ombud service, of course can be done. But then why wouldn't you embed all the others? Why would you put just this one in there? I mean, I suppose you could do the other way around. You could put the dispute resolution in the sectional title schemes management thing, but that doesn't make sense, because why create any form of infrastructure which doesn't address all the forms of housing that exist at the moment? villages, and they're not going to stop doing them in terms of life rights agreements, in terms of trusts, in terms of everything else. So the idea of having a separate community scheme ombuds service bill that is an overarching, think of it as an umbrella form of access to justice for people in housing. I'm sorry, I think I'm starting to bore myself, so I'm going to keep quiet now.
Thank you very much, Prof. No, Honourable Woman.
Thank you very much for that. I think it is becoming clearer. I just want to, if could we just address a little bit, and there's been referred to the bureaucracies that get set up for these things. Can we just have more clarity on that and your thinking behind that? And getting to the people on the ground.
Thank you, Chair. I think they have to give us a clear idea why we cannot match the two bills. Because if they are talking that the ombuds is just an umbrella, but we are now saying we have to measure these two. They have to give us that why we could not measure them.
May I answer that? Or what?
Remember, we are not convinced, but we are not going to take it much to take it further, because after the explanation that we have received, we are going to look at the issues that we can respond to the two questions, and thereafter I will pave the way forward.
I think on answering the second question first, I believe in my own mind that there are fundamentally a number of sound reasons, but if you had to ask me what is the single most important reason not to merge these two, I would say because these will not be then as easily understood. We are beyond the stage in South Africa of having legislation that is only understood by some top echelon of intellectual elite. We need to have legislation where it affects the daily lives of South African consumers that they understand. It has to be written, and we have now, we write things in plain language, and we do 1,000 things. But you also have to structure your legislation so that it is accessible. These, I believe, are structured in that fashion. If you look at the sectional titles, and I'm addressing specifically your question, there are probably many reasons, but to me, the most significant reason, and I say this from the point of view of somebody who has taught sectional title and homeowners associations and living for most of my life, I'm telling you, these are not easy things. People don't understand them just quite well. They are complicated concepts, and you will have seen those when you read these bills. And if you want to make these pieces of legislation accessible and understandable to the general person in South Africa, which, of course, everybody's getting clever, everybody's getting better educated, nonetheless, legislation is not easily understood. These separators are going to be an awful, they address different markets, and they're going to be an awful lot more accessible. So I think that's the primary reason, although I think there are others. Insofar as the question of scope, of reach, and of how this thing is, clearly there is a business case. Clearly it has been thought about carefully. Nobody wants to create unnecessary bloated infrastructure. And if you have a look at the idea behind the creation of the community scheme ombuds service, the idea is to keep it lean and clean, to keep it staffed only with the people that it needs, to outsource to other people the adjudication function when that is beyond the service's capacity in terms of demand, because one accepts that there would be fluctuating demand levels and that sort of thing. But the design of this system has been predicated upon a desire not to allow it to bloat. So it isn't a large institution. We've worked on looking at others, seeing where those have not, none of them have failed, but seeing where the best of them, and that's what we've tried to achieve. But I mean, so is it going to have national reach? Yes, it is. Exactly how that is, the chief ombud is ultimately going to be the person who puts it in place. Our job is to create a structure on which one can do this. But if you have a look at, I believe that the structure created is one that will not lend itself to bloat. Of course, you might have different views of that, but we have tried to take that into account in the design.
No, we'll check on that when we are dealing with the legislation. But I think there was a question of if there won't be any additional burdens that is going to be brought to the communities if we establish this ombuds in the establishment of this ombuds person. If you can clarify that.
I don't know whether I'm going to answer that question now, but I just want to say that the functions of the two boards, the advisory council for this sexual council management act and for the ombuds service, it is quite different. You know, in the one they deal with the problems that arises, it is the management problem, whereas the ombuds service is the settlement of disputes. And you've got to appoint adjudicators and stuff and decide on all those matters. So it's completely different. You can't have the same board, you know, doing these matters. And that's why I think we should have the two boards. And I just want to say that the whole reason why we're introducing this ombuds service is because the courts are too expensive. They're the long processes. Arbitration, which we have in the Act at the moment, is just so expensive. Nobody really goes there except if they have money. So this is really to get it to the ground level people that they can try to solve their disputes.
We're all in agreement for what we're saying. Nobody's disputing that. But that is important. We're looking at the cost. Is there any, can you just indicate what is the pro forma budget in your first year in terms of this? Because, as I was saying, the members have got a concern that at the end of the day, we'll pass this year, and we'll find that there is a burden that will come. We want to trash out all those things that are going to affect the people these bills are intended to relieve them. So where are we going to get the budget for this?
If I could respond to that very briefly, it is accepted that a body like this is going to take some time to get off the ground simply because you have to find the people, you have to train them, you have to put the infrastructure in place. And it is the department's suggestion in the business case, which has incidentally been looked at by Cabinet, that the first year of operation will be funded by government. And thereafter, it will be expected to be self-supporting. If you have a look at, on page 11 of the bill, the funds of the service, could you turn to that just very, very quickly? Page 11 of the Community Scheme Ombuds Service Bill, and if you look about halfway down the page, you will see clause in 22, which is headed funds of the service. And what you will see there is a multifaceted funding model, one that suggests that there would be money appropriated by Parliament from time to time, that there might be levies, that there might be fees, that there would be interest. So you'll see that there is all sorts of things. But in essence, the idea of once the thing is off the ground, it's going to need government funding to stop. There's no doubt, because it won't have income straight away. It will, however, be sitting on community scheme governance documentation, which is currently, it has a commercial value. It is bought copies of those things are currently in the context of the deeds, chief registrar's operation. There's a deeds registration trading account, and they balance their books. So they essentially the deeds office is expected to and does balance its books on the basis of its trading account. And therefore, it looks on a regular basis for financial geniuses checking what it costs to run the deeds office, and then they adjust their fees so as to balance that. Now, this thing you will see, fees for services based on cost recovery. So again, will this thing be free always? No, but it will be incredibly cheap compared to the High Court. Because if you remember all that whole list of types of community scheme I spoke of, not one of the people involved in those community schemes can approach the magistrates' court or the small claims court or anything else. They've got to go to the high court to get any sort of relief. So, you know, what will this cost exactly? Nobody knows, because, you know, the thing isn't, it doesn't exist yet. How many disputes will there be? But there is the costs associated with high court litigation in this country make access to justice for the members of community schemes practically impossible, except if you happen to be in the highest little triangle where you can go and spend 2,000 rand an hour on a relatively cheap advocate and things like that. I mean, you don't, I don't pretend to be a litigation expert, but I don't think that you even look at the High Court before, what did you say, 15,000 rand?
Minimum 15,000.
So, you know, what this seeks to do is give access to justice to people who are suffering within community schemes of all sorts. And will it cost money? Yes. But will it be able to generate income? Yes. You know, the fact of the matter is that banks will pay for information relative to community schemes because they need to lend into them and they need to mitigate against the potential that community scheme is not in a good financial condition. Will estate agents and prospective buyers, investors, will they buy information relative to community schemes? Yes, they're doing it right now. They're spending money on this information. We cannot get exact figures because it's not accounted for separately within the deeds registry system. But people are every day buying copies of sectional title rules. People are every day getting information. Members of the public pay when they get information from the deeds registry. And the at the moment, you have a situation where if your community scheme is a company, then the registrar of companies keeps a copy of that information. But if it's a common law association, such as many homeowners associations are, if it is a retirement village, the chances are nobody has that information, nobody other than the people governing that scheme itself. So the potential for income generation by the collection and retention and of government's documents. But I'm not a business consultant. I can't tell you exactly how much they're going to make. I don't know what the demand is exactly going to be, but I know that there's an existing income stream for that information. The services themselves are ones which will be costed. It would be lovely for me to tell you that there never will be levies, but the fact is that this thing has to have the ability to balance its books. It also has the ability, if you look towards the end of this legislation, to adjust its fees so as to allow waivers and discounts in appropriate situations. So if the minister decides, for example, that it's going to bring various types of schemes within the ambit of this Act, but reduce the amount that those people, because of their economic circumstances, have to pay for the service, he can do that. There are dials that he can turn, so as to make sure, on the one hand, that this thing doesn't become a burden on the fiscus generally, but on the other hand, that certain people pay more or less for it. I mean, the reality is that the dissolution of sectional title, retirement village, share block, all these disputes, all these types of homeowners association disputes today simply isn't happening in all except the most expensive
sorry,
does that make any sense?
I don't know about asking that question. I think let's come to an end of this discussion. My suggestion to this is that let's have a 5-minute break. So that is the portfolio committee, because we discussed this, what we are raising with you, so that we can view the information that you have received, and then we'll take a decision. But we are not releasing you to get out of the gate. We are just releasing you to be nearer, because not for shopping. We are going to call you. Where's the state law? Okay, you are remaining with us.
Some kind of explanation that they've given.
I would take
sense to go leave it at such a good point.
Yeah, from what they've explained. From what they've explained, it makes sense why
it
they have
it. Much, but it just becomes more difficult.
Though. Yes. Yes, it's going to be more difficult.
Particularly
yes.
if we're not in a two-formal structure. So mm-hmm. One is just an advisory council.
Yes, it's different. That one is different.
Yes,
because,
read it
yes,
it's
been also.
Advisory
mm-hmm.
council.
Yes.
They're not duplicating.
No, no. The other one is just a board
yeah,
for
I'm
the family.
I'm inclined to go along
yes.
with it. Although there are things, I mean, you know, here they, you see I made a note there.
Mm.
They say may apply to the court. So why not
court
why the court is,
yes.
why
yeah,
not
we'll
that why not their court
it.
You know that they're from
the yes,
court.
Of court yes. Mm.
Chairperson, I think having listened to this and also the previous course that we had, I think it seems to have become apparent that we do need the two forms. I think our way forward would be to proceed. I think obviously there are things that we need to be vigilant about as we work through the bill, which we can amend. And particularly when it comes to the Ombuds bill as well, so where we feel that it's not really meeting, although they seem to be saying it does, then you know we will be able to amend that. So I think my opinion would be that I think we can proceed with this bill.
Chair, yes, I think we need to be big enough to admit that that perhaps, or that we can change our position. And I think the argument that convinced me that we can in fact live with the two as separate bills is the fact that we don't want to confuse it more than what it is already. And I think it's been somewhat for us already a confusing thing. And what they said in terms of, although I was very clear about the different schemes and that the one applies to three or four schemes and the one only to one, I think that for me is the overriding argument of why I can certainly live with the two separate bills. So that if I want to look at the management of sectional titles, then I only go to the one. But if I live in another scheme and I purely have a problem and I want to go to arbitration, then I've got nothing to do with the management of the sectional titles bill. But as Member Bowman has said, I think it's up to us to fine-tune these things. The other argument that has convinced me is, I've just had another look at it, and the one is an advisory council, so hopefully they're not going to establish a structure that will need offices and all sorts of things. They can meet in the minister's office, for example, or in one of the provincial offices. So I'm a little bit more at ease in terms of the establishment of almost two similar structures. And that was my great concern, that we're establishing these two different bodies. But I can live with us proceeding and having two separate bills, but we're going to have to make some major amendments, I think, to both. Because if I may just mention the one thing why I almost backtracked. The other gentleman made the thing about it being too expensive to go to the courts and so on. And I agree with it. And yet in the community management bill, if you look, for example, on clause 15 on page 12, as well as clause 8 on page 8. And I made a note here. I said, why the court is the first instance? They say a body corporate may apply to the court for the appointment of an administrator. So that's the sort of stuff we're going to need to look at. That should be the last resource. So in this one, we then don't make mention that they should go to the ombudsman in the first instance. So it's, I think that's the type of thing we're going to have to be vigilant about.
No, I'm kind of like super saying like this woman Finding details, where upon us, nobody.
Chair, can I just say something? Yeah. Sorry. Yeah, Chair, look, I fully agree with you. I think because up to now we've actually given the sectional title scheme more attention than the other one. And the other one may need a lot more, excuse me, amendments from us. I want to suggest that we proceed as you've described and we reserve our position because when we get to the other one, we may very well decide we get reconverted the other way. So we proceed like this, but we reserve our position on whether, because we're not going to table the one in the House without having gone through the other one. I presume we want to do it simultaneously, because once we deal with this, we may want to change something here again. The suggestion is that if the committee agrees that we're going to go forward dealing with them as two separate bills, that we still reserve our position until after we've dealt with this, whether we want to in fact make a major amendment and merge them or not. So we make it clear that we're reserving our position on that. We're just keeping a door open in case.
No, I agree with the
thank you.
Yeah, in particular, because we feel that we need to understand the business case, right? And they feel like the motivation for this. And there are a lot of things, I mean, the structures that we talk about, how the people access the service and so forth. So once we get to that, we will understand it better and then we'll be able to change. But for now, I think the position that Mr. Bowman and Mr. Stain hold is sustained. That this group remains until such time
that you find
otherwise. So the motivation will come. Yeah.
Nothing I can say except to say I have to explain. Remember we said we need to be doing something like that. So they've explained to us in two clear terms that the committee can continue to step by step.
But in the
verbal,
yeah. I think we're going to make some major changes to the office.
welcome back. We are going to try, because our time is very limited. We have to leave here at 1. But we'll, by then, I'm pretty sure we'll be have run at least the sense of our life. We have agreed as the portfolio committee that no. Let's take your suggestions that this bill must be driven separately. But there's a big but. We will agree that in the second bill, we are going to expect major amendments from the committee, because we still feel that a lot has to be done. But for now, we're going to begin with the sectional title. We're going to go according to our agenda. But we still need this business case. And the committee also feels that, so that we are preparing, in fact, we are preparing ourselves now, because we all know that we are leaving tomorrow. So there's going to be a big space of time. We are not going to meet for quite a long time. So we'd like the department to also prepare in terms of the ombudsman service. We need the clarity on how many regions with these regional structures. And then the issue of how we need to ensure the access to the local communities, because we are not convinced the way it is structured is going to do any justice to the local communities. And we also would like to know the corporate structure, even at the national level. We'll require also the department to quantify the revenue the service would be able to generate from levies paid by the community schemes, if it's going to go that route. And then we're also, yeah, the business case is already mentioned. So we also would require that you assist us in getting the value of sectional titles transfer each and every year, if it is possible. The value of the sectional titles transfers that are being, those in their annual business. You don't want the old to mention details, the names of the people, what just the value. So that when we take decisions, we know.
Madam Chairman, may I ask that this committee formally requests the Department of Rural Development and Land Affairs to make that information available, because it is within their remit. In fact, the Department of Housing doesn't have any information on that. So, and it would be an awful lot more efficient if you were to ask the DG for that information. I think it would mean, if that were possible. My experience in trying to get that sort of information indicates to me that if you were to ask for it directly from that department, we would be very much more likely to get it.
I don't think we're out of order here, because we're dealing with the Department of Human Settlement, and we'll put our request to the department. It's your role to meet with them, because they also attend this meeting. So I don't think we're out of order. We're still on the right track, because we do business now with the Department of Human Settlements. We're not doing business with, that is another committee. So get us the information when your department. That's not a little longer. Thanks.
The next one on group
bonding
is now. I'm
Because I'm having two documents, I'm having a document with the proposed portfolio committee amendment, which are being proposed by the charter. So I'm not sure which one I'm going to start.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and thanks to the Honorable Members. I will start with the long title of the bill. The long title of the bill reads as thus, Honorable Members, to provide for the establishment of bodies, corporates to manage and control sections and common property sectional titles, schemes, and for that purpose to apply rules applicable to such schemes. To establish a sectional title schemes management advisory council and to provide for matters connected therewith.
Honorable Bowman, comments by members to that one?
Chairperson, having looked at some of the submissions now, there are suggested amendments, and in that introduction, to provide for the establishment of bodies corporate to manage, that word control, we are suggesting that we look at the word regulate.
Okay. Okay, thank you. And Honorable Chair and other members, I'll now go to the arrangement of the Act. We start.
There is then no need for a comma there. Under bodies, after bodies corporate. Can you translate it again? Because we have to understand it clearly.
Thank you, Chair.
Because there are so many commas. We will establish a body corporate.
To provide for the establishment of the body corporate.
Comma?
No.
No?
No.
Okay. So that to manage and control is the function of the body corporate. We are trying to say so.
Regulate, yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Agreed?
Yes, we agree now. We wanted to check that.
Okay, agreed. Honourable members, I'll go now to the arrangement of sections. The arrangement of Act, that will be sections. One deals with the definitions. Number two deals with the bodies corporate. Number three deals with functions of bodies corporate. Number four deals with powers of bodies corporate. 5 deals with additional powers of bodies corporate. 6 deals with the trustees of bodies corporate. 7 deals with the fiduciary positions of trustees. 8 deals with proceedings on behalf of body corporate. 9 deals with rules. 10 deals with effect of quotas and variation thereof. 11 deals with expropriation of common property. 12 deals with duties of owners. 13 deals with insurance by owners. 14 deals with recovery from owners of unsatisfied judgments against bodies corporate and the non-liability of bodies corporate for debts and obligations of developers. 15 deals with appointment of administrators. 16 deals with destructions of or damage to buildings. 17 deals with sectional title schemes management advisory council. 18 deals with regulations, 19 deals with amendments of Act 95 of 86, 20 deals with short title and commencement. You agree?
Okay.
Okay.
I'm just wondering on Section 19, should we not say the amendment of the Section or Title Act?
Okay. Amendment of Section, yes.
To that, this is just the title of the section, and in the section itself, it explains that we're amending the sectional title. On the heading, normally we just say Amendment of Act 95 of 1986, you don't put the title.
Okay.
And then in the body, we'll say that we're talking about the sectional title. Yes, thanks.
Okay, that's fine.
If I may ask from the department, why are we not having a standardized formula in your layout of the bill? Because I wanted to know is it right not to have a standardized format in your layout? We need to make each other understand. Not a serious dispute, but want to check.
I'm not sure, Chair, as to, you know, the standardized, but I...
Service.
Yes.
The layout.
The difference between the two, the Ombuds service is a very lengthy bill. That's why we split it into chapters. And this one is just a straightforward with only 20 clauses. That's why we put it like that. We're not separating into chapters. So the distinction is between if the bill is very lengthy, you will separate it in chapters. And then if it's a straightforward, there's no need for chapters. There's no standard formula for that.
Thank you, Chair. I'm checking on number 17. Is that the advisory council or advisory board? Oh. Okay.
Functions of the board corporate, powers of the board trustees of body corporate fiduciary position. But don't they have the roles of the other those trustees? Are they not supposed to have roles and responsibilities to play? I don't know. It's a question.
I think, Chair, with regard to that, I think it would be more appropriate to deal with it when you deal with that particular law so that they can give a clear understanding with regard to it, because it will bring confusion. Okay. Yes. Definition number one, it says, honorable members, in this act and the rules, unless the contents otherwise indicate, provide body corporates in relation to a building and the land in a sectional title scheme means the body corporate of that building referred to in section 2.1.
No. You can look at your... The members can have the documents with comments where those comments were worked together. And then we also look at the bill, original bill. So in the original bill, we are on page 2, where we are dealing with the definition. So we are at the definition of the corporate, body corporate. So, can we carry on?
The other definition, that means the court.
The board of corporate, in relation to a building and the land in a sectional title scheme, means the body corporate of that building referred to in section 2(1) of the clause of the bill. Okay.
The other one is court. Court means the High Court having jurisdiction, and for the purpose of section 12.
Chief? Yes. Yeah. May I just ask a question? In the definition, that first body corporate, we only refer to it mentioned in section 2.1, but it is mentioned throughout the bill. For example, I mean, if you look at section 2, it's mentioned in 2.5, it's mentioned in 2.7, it's mentioned. So is it correct to just refer to it as mentioned in 2.1 then? Or should we say in section 2 and not 2 clause 1?
Can we get to section 2.1 so that we all have one understanding? So what
okay.
is meant
yeah.
in section 2.1?
Yeah.
With effect from the date on which any person other than the developer becomes an owner of a unit in a scheme, there shall be deemed to be established for that scheme a body corporate of which the developer and such person are members, and any person who thereafter becomes an owner of a unit in that scheme is a member of that body corporate. So I wanted to check if
okay.
Why? Oh, yeah, you get it now.
Yeah.
Are you happy?
That's actually the definition there in that clause. Yeah. Yeah.
There is a definition
yeah.
in section 2.1.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
Court means the High Court having jurisdiction, and for the purpose of section 12. A magistrate court having jurisdiction. Then table 12.
To the court. Are we all taping that one?
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Mr. Finn?
Just a question for information here. We also refer to, for example, in clause 15.1, to a court as well as in another section here. Now, does that mean in the other instances that it will only be a high court? Is that correct? I get both a yes and a no, so I'm not sure.
Certainly, the appointment of administrators would, by implication of that, be limited only to a high court. But my recollection is that the collection of levies is something that also includes a magistrate's court. So there is another provision in this act relative to the. So is your statement that would all the other references to court be the high court? It's not absolutely correct because you can also collect levies in a magistrate's court, and that's specifically provided.
Then that is the case, Chairperson. The definition is wrong because the definition is saying court means the high court having jurisdiction. And for the purpose of Section 12, it means magistrate court. So it's just saying only for Section 12, the magistrate court. But for other sections, it's Section 12, I mean, it's high court. That's what the definition says. So we need to be clear on that. Are you intending the high court for other sections and only for Section 12 to be the magistrate court?
And we are intending to take them to the higher court. So it means we have to clarify that.
Honorable,
if they are using a court there, then what's the purpose of having an ombud?
We have read Section 12. Section 12 does not refer to the High Court. It refers to the Magistrate Court. So it means that you have to work that one. Because we don't have to, let's agree that we leave it for next time because tomorrow we are coming back. Let's leave it so that we carry on. That we are not in agreement with this definition. For progress sake, for progress sake, let's agree that we don't agree with the proposed definition on court. So you are going to work it out as in Pumle meeting.
Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Just on a matter of process, I've got some definitions that I believe should be included. Should I wait until it's completed?
No, you can put a proposal.
Yeah.
Put a proposal, and then they will come back tomorrow.
First of all, I want to suggest that we put these definitions in alphabetical order, which means Chief Ombud must go before court. And then I want to propose that we make reference to a competent authority in Section 3H, I think it is. And I believe we need a definition for a competent authority. If we... That's in 3L. That talks about a competent authority.
Thank you, Chair. definition of chief ombud means chief ombud as defined in the Community Schemes Ombud Service Act of 2010.
And one person, if you look in the definition of chief ombud, it is in small letter, not high case. So I would say we must change it to be in small letters, chief and ombud. The capital C and O should be in small letter, as is the case in the committee scheme. So we will have to amend that definition to reflect that. To reflect that, because we are referring to chief ombud as defined in the Community Schemes Ombud Service Act. And if you go to that bill, you see how it is defined. It is defined in small letters. So it must be aligned, the two must be aligned.
The other definition is the one of the department, means the Department of Human Settlements. Director General means the Director General Human Settlement.
I just need the clarity there. We're talking about the department means the Department of Human Settlement. And if you talk about the department, you can talk about the Department of Home Affairs. Is it just because we're talking about the Department of Human Settlement, that's why we say Department of Human Settlement?
Hmm.
If
there's a name change of the department, as is usually the case, would it mean the amendment of the act again change the definition? Or should the definition not say the Department of Human Settlement or its successor or something along those lines?
Jefferson, I just want to check on that one because we're talking about the department. And then when it comes to the Director General, it doesn't mean that it's just the Director General of the Department of Human Settlement, or it might just remain as Human Settlement. Thank you, Shepard.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think with regards to the earlier question, I think it does not mean necessary to say that, it's not normally, let me say, a practice. When you draft legislation, when you refer, you say, to other, future, either changes. But however, in terms of the Interpretation Act, the Interpretation Act takes care of that to say that the department will automatically mean unless the indication indicates otherwise, to say that it will mean the Department of Human Settlement. Like with regards to some of the other pieces of legislation that we still have other, our piece of legislation still refer to the Department of Housing. But however, in terms of the Interpretation Act, it does not necessarily mean a different department, but it simply refers to the same department. The other definition is exclusive use area. Means a part or parts of the common property for the exclusive use by the owner or owners of one or more sections. Agreed?
Mm-hmm.
The other one is the lease, honorable members. For the purpose of Section 5(1)(a), with a lease which A was entered into for a period of not less than 10 years, B was entered into for the natural life of the lessee or any other persons mentioned in the lease, or C is renewable at the will of the lessee indefinitely or for the periods which, together with the first period, amount in all to not less than 10 years. Then minister, meet the Minister of Human Settlement.
Owner.
The owner, in relation to a unit or a section or an undivided share in a common property forming part of such unit, means, subject to subsection 5, the person in whose name the unit is registered at the deed registry in terms of the Sectional Titles Act, or in whom ownership is vested by statute, including the trustee in an insolvent estate, the liquidator of a company or a close corporation which is an owner, the executor of an owner who has died, or the representative of an owner who is a minor or unsound mind recognized by law, and owner and ownership have a corresponding meaning.
Can we just, that minor or a person of unsound mind, do we need to have more clarity on that? Unsound mind, I mean, what is that a legal term that's acceptable?
It's a legal term.
And it's got its own legal meaning. No, the question is it defined? Because you cannot mention something that is not defined. Have you defined it here?
No. I don't think.
Can I assist, share with your permission, of course? I think it would not be proper to define it, because what you are doing now, you are taking away the inherent jurisdiction of the High Court, which is the entity that actually has the power to put a definition to this, because there's the issues of medical evidence that needs to be presented to a judge to declare somebody of an unsound mind for purposes of this legal transaction. So it would be inappropriate to try and restrict the court to a definition that the legislator actually creates, because in any event, they have an inherent jurisdiction to override whatever definition that you put in any legislation. Bongiwe, you must assist me.
It is not the advice that the person as he has already explained. And also you would use its ordinary meaning, I mean, someone who is of unsound mind. I mean, I think that term is I'm not saying it's clear enough, but, you know, you can use your... But not to defy the chairperson.
how are you going to determine in between?
Can I?
These persons apply to get a house and all those things, and all those things, but they are part of the community. That happens. And then, how are you going to find that person in between?
Madam Chair, in terms of legal jurisprudence, there's been cases that has been to court where the court has actually given a particular set of circumstances and facts before the court have determined that in this and that case, based on the following evidence that has been presented, a person has been declared. So it's a custom that comes for many, many years. When you speak in the legal cycles, ordinarily, when you speak of a person who is of unsound mind, it is accepted that if you would take this person through the medical processes and the court should come to a decision, the decision would be that a person is of unsound mind. So it's a generally accepted terminology that has not been boxed in any manner.
I wonder if I can maybe have some assistance here, Chair. A few years ago, I was a member of the Health Committee as well. And I know we did a bill there about when people should be committed, either by the state or by families. And I'm just wondering if perhaps one shouldn't, or if they shouldn't look into one of those bills. I'm almost positive that unsound, there's some sort of definition which takes into consideration the courts or some hospital authority. And obviously, if there is an acceptable definition there, that we then use that definition.
On page 4, for the purpose of the definition of owner, if a unit is subject to a lease for a period of 99 years or longer, or for the life of the building or buildings concerned and registered in this registry, the holder of such a lease is considered to be an owner for the duration of that lease. B, if a unit is registered in this registry in the name of both spouses in a marriage in common community of property, or C, in the name of only one spouse or form part of the joint estate of both spouses or in the marriage community of property. Either one or both of the spouses are considered to be owner. That is subsection 5 that we are referring to.
So can put subsection 5A and B?
Subsection 5 of the definition.
Subsection 5A.
The whole five applies to the definition.
So it's A and B.
No, but it's five.
Oh, let me see. Okay.
But it's five.
All right. We still don't have an agreement with the
definition.
B1. But yeah, I don't know how we're going to approach
it. Like,
okay, let's carry on.
Okay, great. I think also to provide further clarity on our chair, you know, also to the honorable members. Like sometimes, you know, illegislative drafting is normally sometimes not a practice to define each and every word. Some other words will assume its ordinary meaning or a dictionary meaning of the particular word. So certain, you know, definitions, certain words you don't have to define in a piece of legislation.
if there is, of course, it can assume the ordinary meaning or a dictionary meaning of that particular word. Definition of, going to definition of prescribed.
Chair, I think before we go to prescription, on top of that, they talk about owned, it's not the owner. Owned and ownership.
What we are trying to say there is very simple to say that recognized by law, and we are saying owned and ownership have a corresponding meaning. I cannot simplify it further. Unsound mind.
Yes, Madam Chair, I think in the sectional titles act there's also a provision that if someone is of unsound mind they can no longer be a trustee, things like that. And there's no definition in the sectional titles act on that. And there's no definition anywhere if someone is insolvent or we're dealing with a company and so forth.
We can carry on because we are still going to debate when we get to the act per se. We are still going to engage. At what stage do we say that person is unsound? Because I'm still adamant that you cannot say a person is unsound before you have had the proof from the medical sector. So let's leave it as if your definition, let's put it that way. But when it comes to the act per se, yes. Yeah. Because they agree with me. Let's carry on.
Sorry, no, but I was going to say, that it is not up to the community or the person litigating that to determine whether a person is sound or unsound. It is only the court can prove that.
If I can come in quickly there, I think we must not read it out of context. The sentence, we must not put our focus on that unsound mind. We're starting by saying the representative of an owner who is a minor or of unsound mind. That in itself informs us that there's been a process in court where somebody has been appointed as a representative of that person who is of unsound mind. So we must understand it in that context, because I see the difficulty in the house is we are focusing just on that word or two words, unsound mind, out of the context of the entire sentence. I'm shutting up.
If we can be able to define outside mind, it means we have to also define a minor.
Okay, I think we have become of one mind, because just to reinforce what was said here, that we mustn't read it in isolation. You should have just carried on. It says after or of unsound mind, recognized by law. So it takes it further in terms of what Member Toza also said, that so the law will then define that that person is of unsound mind. So I think we can put this one to bed.
We'll move on to definition of prescribed means prescribed by regulation. Agreed? A regulation means a regulation made under this act. Agreed? Rules in relation to a building which is divided into sections and common property means the management rules and conduct rules referred to in section 9, 2, A and B respectively. I'll go to 9 and B. Okay. These are the 9, plus 9 deals with the rules. Says a scheme must, as from the date of the establishment of the body corporate, be controlled and managed subject to the provisions of this act by means of rules. Two, the rules must provide for the control, management, administration, use, and enjoyment of sections and common property and comprise. And it says management rules comprise also the conduct rules. Agree to the definition?
Okay, we earlier in the introduction of the bill, we decided to replace the word control with regulate.
Yes.
I'm just wondering if we shouldn't do the same thing here in 9.2 there where it says provide for the control, but
for the regulate.
For the regulation.
Yes. Thank you, Chair. We go to Sectional Titles Act. Means the Sectional Titles Act 1986. Act number 95 of 1986.
It has never been amended.
It has been amended.
You don't know?
It has been amended. It's amended.
It's been amended from 1951 up to 1986. So many times. Let's say, let's end. As amended from time to time, because they read, it has been amended.
It was amended last month.
Yes. Yes.
Rule department.
As amended.
Yeah,
always take the latest one.
This is an understood meaning of the term, but if you obviously if you want to put it in there, it doesn't add anything to the act.
Even if we don't say as amended, I mean we put the correct citation of the act. It includes its amendment and everything. So when you say the Sectional Titles Act of 1986, we talk about the act as amended without even saying it.
It is amended.
If you go to the Act now, if you go to the Sectional Titles Act, what you will find there is the Act is amended. But the number would simply say Sectional Titles Act 95 of 1986. But the actual content would be as amended today. That's what you'll find there if you go there. So I agree with my colleagues on both sides to say
whether we add the words as amended, it really not add anything to the substance of the legislation, but it's your legislation. You tell us what you like.
Go to another definition, a special resolution. Sustain not this one. Means subject to subsection 3, a resolution A passed by a majority of not less than 3/4 of the votes reckoned in number, you know, in value, and not less than 3/4 of the votes reckoned in number of members of the body corporate who are present or represented by proxy or by a representative recognized by law at a general meeting of which at least 30 days written notice specifying the proposed resolution has been given. Provided that in circumstances determined in the rules, a meeting of the body corporate may be convened 30 days or less after notice of the proposed resolution has been given to all the members of the body corporate. Or B, agreed to in writing by at least 75% of all the members of a body corporate, written in number, and at least 75% of all such members reckoned in value, personally or by proxy or by representative of any such member recognized by law.
Chairperson, can I be clarified on the record, the difference between the record in value and record in number?
I just want to refer to the written notice. Are we by that referring to a notice physically written? Can that include your faxing and your emails? Or SMSs maybe? Yeah, so very much a used thing today.
Thank you, Chair. The written notice thing has been covered. I was thinking, just for consistency, why in A do we talk about 3/4 and then in B about 75%? Why don't we just use 75%? And then again, just to be consistent, maybe just keep it, we're either going to say 75% of the votes reckoned in value, and in B reckoned in value and then followed by reckoned in number. It's just consistency again, rather than changing them around like this.
I respond to that. The 3/4 and 75% thing, there's no sense in it whatsoever. Choose whichever you like and let's be consistent.
75%.
Percentages are generally considered to be more modern than fractions, perhaps. The question of written notice, there is some mention of how notice is to be given in terms, and we'll get to it a little bit later, but in general terms, the question of delivery of notice in terms of is dealt with in detail in the prescribed management rules. Those rules have not been updated or even, I mean, they were basically drafted in the, probably in the mid-70s, and they don't provide and should, but that's really not the job for the Act. As it stands at the moment, the way in which you'll see there's a qualification in a minute, but notices are dealt with in the rules as opposed to in the, so that allows every scheme to make special arrangements that are suitable to them. Okay, so that is not a fundamental provision made in the Act. The question of the difference of reckoning in a sectional title scheme, A person has a number of sections. You have to own at least one section, which is an integral part of a unit in order to be an owner. And a section is your value in number is how many sections you own, how many different physical sections you own. And then the value is something that is either calculated according to the participation quota schedule or calculated at the moment in terms of Section 32.4. There is a provision within sectional title, I don't want to give you too much detail unless you want it, that allows the body corporate or the developer to adjust the weighting of a particular vote. So, but every single vote in a sectional title scheme has a number according to how many there are and the value. So your votes are valued. If you don't do anything else about it, it's valued basically on the size of the floor area.
The definition of this act includes regulations. Agreed.
Well, with your thing that you want me to, I mean, there is not really a definition. It says this act, it says includes regulations. I mean, I'm not sure if it's really a definition. Is it?
What it is in fact saying, any reference to this act will include a reference to the regulation. This is the definition of the term this act, giving it a specific and unusual legal meaning which extends its scope beyond the terms of this particular act so as to include the regulations promulgated beneath it.
Orange here? Yeah, we're getting on.
Anonymous resolution means subject to subsection 4. So subsection 4, I will say it's on page 4.
7.
Okay. Oh. It's on 4, it's on page 4.
Page 4.
Resolution A, passed anonymously by all the members of a body corporate who are present or represented by proxy or by a representative recognized by law at the general meeting of the body corporate of which at least 30 days written notice specifying the proposed anonymous resolution has been given and at which meeting at least 80% of all the members of the body corporate written in number and at least 80% of all the members written in value are present or represented. Provided that in circumstances determined in the rules, a meeting of the body corporate may be convened 30 days or less after notice of the proposed resolution has been given to all the members of the body corporate, or agreed to in writing by all the members of the body corporate personally or by proxy or by representative of any such member recognized by law. 2. Now, 2. The term building, common property, deed registry, developer, development scheme, land, local authority, participation quota, registrar, scheme, section, sectional mortgage bond, sectional plan, undivided share in common property, and the unit apply in the interpretation of this act as they are defined in the Sectional Titles Act. 3. For the purpose of the definition of special resolution, a notice contemplated in the definition is deemed adequate if, page 4, it has been delivered by hand to a member not less than days prior to the relevant general meeting, or B, it was dispersed by prepaid registered post not less than 30 days prior to such meeting to the address of a member or of a member's unit in the relevant scheme, or to such other address as a member may have indicated in writing for the purposes of such notice. Four, that the three was referred to, for the purposes of the definition of an anonymous resolution, a notice contemplated in that definition is considered adequate if it has been delivered to or dispatched to the address of a member as contemplated in subsection 3. B, a member present or represented at a meeting contemplated in that definition, who personally or through a proxy or representative, as the case may be, abstained from voting on the resolution in question, is regarded as having voted in favor of the resolution. And C, where the resolution in question adversely affects the proprietary rights or powers of any member as owner, the resolution must not be regarded as having been passed unless such member consents thereto in writing. Five, for the purposes of the definition of owner,
Honorable Vachova, Honorable Figlan or Bowman, Stain, or Stain, Tolle, Honorable Nisi, Honorable Bula, yeah.
There's a word which has been used, abstain from voting in the resolution in question, is regarded as having voted in favor, but abstain.
This word proxy that we keep using, I'm just wondering if that doesn't perhaps need a definition. And then the other thing here in 2, where we refer to a local authority, I think just to update that with municipality, and then that would also need a definition, I would think. No?
Earlier the question about written notice was raised and about other forms of notice. Now, these paragraphs here are peppered with written notice specifically. And we still haven't addressed the question of the other forms of notice, and perhaps it should be here somewhere.
I've seen that a letter should be delivered by hand. It is not necessary just to put emails and such. So it has to be hand delivered.
No, Chair, I think this of the notices has a legal binding, so it needs to be as addressed as indicated.
I still feel that there has to be a definition of the trustee. Although, as you know, there's no need for them, but I think the trustees, there has to be a definition, and the levy. Patrosi has mentioned here the common property, I think. We still need, and there's an issue of then administrator, yes. No, no, they have not mentioned anything. For now, those are the issues. And I think it is important to address the issue of this abstained person. If we agree on this definition, it's fine, but we still have to agree. It's impossible that once I abstain, this means I don't favor. I don't favor any decision.
Madam Chair, if I could just respond to some of that. Okay. Just the reason that the abstention, there is this fiction of a unanimous resolution. And we still call it a unanimous resolution, even though it is not necessarily unanimous in the context of a meeting. And it is in accordance with that section that anyone who chooses to be present, thus making up the 80% quorum, but chooses not to exercise any vote, needs to be deemed to have cast a positive vote, otherwise you don't have unanimity. So in the outside of a meeting, you need every single person, you need absolute and real unanimity. In practice, under the Sectional Titles Act, they found that they simply couldn't get it. Somebody who's suing for levies or whatever simply refuses to, or votes against. And so it was necessary to create a super majority quorum and then to say you either, if you want to stop it, you must vote against it. And that's why the legal fiction that if you abstain, you are deemed to have voted in favor of it is required, so as to reconcile that concept with the concept of a unanimous resolution. Does that make sense?
Positive side, rather than taking it on the negative side, so that I can confirm in writing.
The only rationale of taking an abstention as a positive vote is so as to make up the numbers and basically say that you have unanimity. If you don't want to, I mean, the logic would be then don't call it a unanimous resolution and you won't confuse people. But if you want to call it a unanimous resolution, and you want its requirements to be satisfied by no negative votes, you could change the definition of this thing to a resolution without dissent, for example. That would be fine. But whilst it's a unanimous resolution, this fiction is required so as to create unanimity.
Chairperson, our constitution is clear. A person has a right either to vote or not to vote. If I abstain, how can they say that it's unanimous? Because I didn't vote. Thank you, Chair.
You go to a meeting, and then by going to a meeting, that means that I want to agree with the meeting. If we say no, this one is doesn't suit me. I feel I'm abstaining, or not to vote. It's up to me.
You can certainly achieve what you want to, but you're going to need to change the name of the resolution so that it's not misleading, and you're going to have to cater for the situation where somebody does abstain. So it can completely be done. It's no doubt.
Chairperson, if I abstain to participate here, it means that I'm not favoring anything. The constitution of this country allows that. So we cannot put pressure on other people to be put on other side, to favor other sides. Thank you, Chair. We have a freedom of choice here in this country. Thank you.
I don't know, because if my view in responding to that point is that if you don't agree with something,
you actually say, I don't agree with something. Therefore, you vote against it.
Now,
prefect to put it on the positive side. Because abstinence, it is there.
That's unanimity.
Not I want to know what I want to say. We are dealing with practicalities on the ground now.
No, I know I belong to somebody. My question is really,
Mike, put the mic on, please.
Does unanimity not mean that there was no opposing voice to this action? Because that's what I assume. It doesn't say everybody agrees, because in the first place, you only have 80% of people present in that. There are people who, if they were present there, they would have said no. But in reality, in terms of the representative figure that you have, you're actually saying there was no opposing voice. If there was an opposing voice, it would have been registered as such.
Of a person who has been abstained. And now for me, it would be better we delete that part. And then we carry on. We consider that percentage, those 75% we have mentioned before. But if I abstained, don't consider me.
I do understand, because it was as of 1986 as well. No, not now.
Sorry. If I may just suggest, Chair, that we flag this and perhaps we come back to it, and maybe the gentleman who's been working on this could come back with something. You've heard our concerns, and that it's put in a better way, because if we're struggling to understand it, you can imagine that at the local level, it's going to be even worse.
Can I just make a quick comment, Madam Chair?
I think we must quickly refer back. Remember, at I think that would be clause 1, subsection 2, where, let me just see quickly. No. My cross-referencing is not correct.
I just wanted to, do we have the CREM in the corresponding legislation with the Department of Rural Development where this unanimous resolution is defined, or are we? It's only here. Okay, so there's all right. No, that's fine. Then my concern is not relevant anymore. Please. Now, if now the department is going to refer to land reform and also what we are faced with them human settlement. It's going to create them a problem. He can say, they say, no, he was this from the land affairs, the rural development and land affairs. But whereas we are dealing direct with the human settlement, as if now they just take the portion from rural development and bring it here. I thought maybe now we are dealing with human settlement, not the portion which are coming from other departments.
I think the point on the reference to the rural, to the sectional titles, is in terms of registration in Moti. Because whatever, it has to comply with the registration. But in terms of management, this is a new bill to us to cover the members. This is a new bill to us. Really, it's going to cause a confusion issue. But now we will do that. Then at the end, when we are finalizing the legislation, because what we are saying, the conditions that are there in the Rural Development Act, they still apply until such time we finished this piece of legislation. Thereafter, when we are finalizing, let's remind each other that we run through again, and then everything should reflect this act. I think we are on agreement on that one. Okay. So, back to Kangan, see the question mark, what to tell was the 5 minutes of Sheikh Leo, give a productive. What was
that? Before I'm talking about Twitter, who A50, the last are present or so represented? Why so? Why did they put so?
Okay. If you're not present, but I'm your representative.
I'm the president.
Okay.
Hey.
Yes.
Madam Chair, the word so has a useful purpose in that sentence. It refers back to the concept of representation by proxy or by a representative recognized by law, and that is the context of the so. Okay. Does that make sense? It is not just represented in any way, it's represented in that way. How? So represented. The so refers to the proxy or the representation recognized by law. So the so classifies that type of representation which might apply in the rest of that sentence.
I think we have to pass through this one. So we are all in agreement that we need the definition, and then we change that local authority to a municipality, and we also define the municipality. And then we also need the definition of the common property and trustees. Okay. Let's carry on. Where are we now?
On clause 2.
Oh, 2?
Yes.
We can't. Who speaks of time is? Page 4.
4, 6.
Yes. And even now, 5. Must be about 5.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Chair. For the purposes of the definition of owner, A, if a unit is subject to a lease for a period of 99 years or longer, or for the life of the building or buildings concerned and registered in a deed registry, the holder of such lease is considered to be the owner for the duration of that lease. And B, if a unit is registered in a deed registry, one in the name of both spouses in a marriage in community of property, or two in the name of only one spouse and forms part of the joint estate of both spouses in a marriage in community of property. Either one or both of the spouses are considered to be the owner.
I have a problem here with this, with only regarding the marriage in community of property. While our constitution provides for many marriages here in South Africa, we have common law marriages that is regarded as legal. If you pay lobola to someone for 6 months, it is regarded as legal. Where does these things all fit in here? We cannot consider one. Thank you, Chair.
I'm partly covered, Chairperson, because I wanted to mention the Civil Union Act as well as the customary marriage. In the deed register, who quiz, Mr. Lat, you request them to bring their certificate. They've married in terms of the civil union, or myself and the colleagues. What do you do? Do you reject that? Why are we not considering the marriages, other marriages?
The reason for this provision, and at the time it was made, was because a marriage in community of property creates a separate joint matrimonial estate. That is one of the common law effects of a marriage in community of property, the creation. Each of the people is divested of their personal estates, and all their assets are automatically vested in a joint matrimonial estate. But certainly this may be something that we need to reconsider.
It was then. We have got these marriages and they are recognized. He's up.
Okay. I think we must not create confusion between the various types of legislation that provide for various marriages from the matrimonial regime or consequences of a marriage. Because both in terms of the Marriages Act, a marriage can be in community or out of community of property. In terms of the recognition of customary marriages act, a marriage can be in and out of community of property. So we must not get confused with that, because here we are not dealing with the even that, Madam Chair. Even that, because even people within civil union marriages have been informed by colleagues, you know, in practice, that people come in and they do conclude a sort of antenuptial contract to regulate the consequences of marriages. But this provision are not saying you don't recognize a marriage in terms of the recognition of Customary Marriages Act. You marry in terms of the recognition of Customary Marriages Act, and then you decide whether your marriage is going to be in community of property or out of community of property. That is not a marriage itself. Now you're addressing the consequences with regard to finances and other things emanating from that marriage. So we must not be confused with those.
We need to have the way, I don't know. Because you are explaining to us. But when it gets to the ground, this thing, people can take an advantage of this. This is legislation, and it's easy to manipulate, even by some of us here in this house. We can manipulate this. So we need something that is going to assist. Well, when we get out, no, let's agree about about this now. But it has to come up.
Just a small thing, Madam Chair, quickly. I think if you look in terms of the how property ownership in South Africa, in terms of proving who is an owner or not, our situation is simplified by the Deed Registries Act, which provides that when you have a title deed, so a person can be married in terms of civil union. If you want to prove whether they are owner or not, you simply go to the deed office. They have already recognized the effect that these people are in an institution in terms of the Civil Union Act, or a recognition of Customary Marriages Act, or the Traditional Civil Marriages Act. In the deed office, you simply get a printout. It shows you this is the owner. So I don't think we must try and define owner with regard to property, because that problem has been taken out of our hands. We've got a system that is working in the country where you go to the deed office, you find out who owns the property, unless somebody challenges that. And even that, there's legislation that provides that you have to bring in a court process to go and have that dispute resolved in the High Court.
Okay, can we agree that we leave it as it is here on the definition? But let's pay the way. I think in the regulations we must spell it out, because we have got an experience of people. And we are talking about people who are coming up about nothing. Because you'll find that the people from the previous disadvantaged group, some of them, they don't know. They just jump on to these things. And then only umuntu will take advantage as of Comfy. So we are saying, let's leave it to definition. Then in terms of regulations, let's make it a point to clarify the issue. It's up to you, Chris.
To be honest to ourselves, our colleagues took this act and as they were then, and bring it here. You sat down the information, the act we are going to pass in the parliament. If now each and every we are bringing us the act of 1986 to the at this point in the time, I'm just a plea to you that, but please change this so that it fits now the time.
That we are going to leave it as it is, but we still need a room in the regulations, because so at least for the purpose of what you say in the act, it's complicated. Let's leave it, and then those things will be clarified. We regulations. We're all in agreement on that one. That's it. Okay, here's our six. Here's our six.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Number six says that if the body corporate is unable to obtain an anonymous resolution or relief, it may approach court for relief.
Why? Why so early you rush to the court?
Chair, besides your question about why the court is the first port of call, at the risk of sounding ignorant, how is this a definition? Is this not part of the functions of a body corporate? It's because it says something very specific. If they don't obtain, and I think unanimous relief need to be identified. But how is this a definition?
What Honorable Stein says, this could be contained somewhere else. The reason that it's here was originally because it's a qualification to the definition of what was intended to be a qualification. But I completely agree with you, or we completely agree with you, that such a provision could be elsewhere. I think without making excuses for other people, when they looked at a place to hang this particular provision, this was the most logical place. But your point is well made. It isn't in itself a definition, it is a qualification to a definition. And the issue of why it's here at all is because under the original Act, 66 of 1971, and under it was absolutely impossible. It's the same reason that they reduced the quorum for a unanimous resolution. They found in practice there are many, many things, important things, that have to be done within the management of a scheme for which you need a unanimous resolution. And they found that it was impossible to get one. The second you're suing somebody for levies, they're not going to agree to the unanimous resolution. So this possibility, this opens, and one of the questions you might have asked is, well, why don't we let them take it to the Community Scheme Ombud? But the fundamental question is, this is here to address a suffering that the people in sectional titles were undergoing. They couldn't get a unanimous resolution, and they needed it for important things. You can't even change a management rule without a unanimous resolution. Thus, a backdoor to somebody is a necessity.
No, you can't rush to the court because we are trying to save people here. Mm-hmm. If we listened carefully, the rationale of this, we want to relieve people from the cost. So let's agree that though this is not the route that we can go through, that ombud person has to get in here. One little thing on this, it says it may, if a body comes unable to obtain a unanimous release, it's not unanimous release, it's unanimous resolution. So there's an error there, but we've noted in our amendments here. Thanks.
Yeah, I think we have a
stop. My time is 5 past now. But if I may request the member that there was, to me, on the board is corporate. There's nothing much that we can raise, but we do have some two issues. If we can just deal with the board is corporate only, and then we look at the functions on Friday, and then we carry on. Are we allowed to do that, members?
Yeah. Chair, I would agree with you. The only comment I see I've got there is we refer to very many sections in the Sectional Titles Act. And I just want to impress upon whoever's responsibility that is, I will do it myself as well later on, that we just cross-check that these sections that we refer to is in fact the sections in the amended act.
I don't trust you, I'm going to check that.
Is there any other member who has got something to raise on this? But for me, I've got we've dealt with the issue of the municipality. You are going to run through and read through the control. No, let's not get there. But I think for me, the developer, because you speak much of the developer. We don't know in the content here. Yeah, define developer in this instance. And I think on the issue of this, we can think about the issuing of the certificate, but we're all in agreement that there can be a problem if the certificate is issued by the Department of Rural. But there has to be a way that as human settlement, whether it's the department, to confirm that that body has been established, the body is corporate. So work on that thing. And then when we meet on Friday, we touch those things. I think let me thank everybody. You have done a remarkable contribution, and we do trust we are still going to work. Now we are working closely to each other. There's no us and them now. We are a team. We have to understand that we are one team. Because once we invite you to come and work with the parliament, you belong to this team now. So let's strive and make sure that at the end of the day, we are coming up with the bill which we are all going to be proud of, all of us here in this room. Not us and them, all of us here. So as I mentioned, that the committee is committed, we are still committed. I thank you. Let's meet on Friday. Ha, ha, ha.